August 8, 2018, it's Watt from Pedro Show. Not man alone, totally, because through the wonders of those engineers in Estonia, out of Skype, I got Robert Poss with me from New York City. How's the weather there, Robert? Welcome aboard.
Hi, it's really hot here. I mean, it's...
And there was a lot of humidity. Is that what you're having? That's what was in
there. Yeah, it tends to be really muggy, and air quality goes down, although we did have thunderstorms last night, and that, you know, a good rainstorm tends to clear the air
sure.
a bit. I'm used to it.
Yeah, you've been there a long time, right?
Yeah, I actually moved here in 1980, and I've been living basically in the same neighborhood in the East Village since then. So, and actually for the first like 20 years I lived here, I didn't have air conditioning. I just had a lot of fans.
Yeah.
Which means like at night, you're just like blowing hot air on yourself and convincing yourself that it's cooling, you know.
Yeah, I remember going to visit a buddy on Canal by the tunnel there with everybody with the horns going.
Right.
He's on the sixth floor, you know, the sun is just, I would just lay on his deck, you know, move as barely as possible, because
yeah.
It was like, yeah. I should say what we started off with, Miles Davis, last tour he did with John Coltrane in Europe, 1960, we heard All Blues, and then from your brand new record, You'll Curse the Day. Can we go back, like, you're not from New York City, so can you remember your... Or just your earliest musical recollection?
Well, you know, I'm a kid of the 60s, you know, I was born in 56, so, I mean, my earliest musical recollections were probably, you know, records my parents played, and they, like, played, like, Burl Ives and, you know, a few folk singers and some international records that they had gotten through. I think they were involved in something called World Hospitality, where, like, people from other countries would come and have dinner with us occasionally, and so I remember seeing some crazy records from Africa and some Indian classical music. But I think, you know, my first serious sort of musical crush was the Beatles. I saw them on Ed Sullivan, and I didn't like them at first because my elder sisters loved them, and I thought that they were kind of strange. But, you know, I went out, and I was really pretty young. I went out, I think the first record I ever bought was A Hard Day's Night, or it might have been the Beatles' second album. And from there, I got totally immersed in the Beatles and the Stones and the Who and the Kinks. And at the same time, I was really in love with blues music. So I was listening to not only, sort of the white English blues guys, but I was listening to, I would buy these records by, like, Blind Boy Fuller, and I would buy these French musical imports. For some reason, in a certain period of time, the French were, like, importing, or they were exporting all these records like Ma Rainey and all this really cool stuff that you couldn't get in America.
Yeah.
And I became obsessed with Albert King and Mike Bloomfield. Paul Butterfield Blues Band was the first concert I ever went to. So, you know, it was blues and rock mostly with a little bit of the international stuff thrown in.
Yeah. Where was this?
I'm sorry?
Where was this?
Oh, this was in Buffalo, New York. I grew up in a suburb of Buffalo, New York,
Lake Erie,
called Kenmore. So, you know, of course, when you're from Buffalo, you don't develop a superiority complex, right? Because, you know, you're like, where you're from Buffalo. And for a lot of people, it's sort of a bit of a joke. But it wasn't a bad place to grow up, really.
I played Buff State. One time, the other college there, the gig got canceled because the riots were happening here in 92.
So we
pulled a fire alarm, and they thought it was going to spread. From Crenshaw District.
That's pretty funny.
I think it's a SUNY.
Yeah, SUNY Buffalo. It used to be called University of Buffalo, and then it changed to SUNY Buffalo.
Right.
Yeah, it's a
big SUNY
school
I know
in the
space
system.
The SUNY I know is Stony Brook.
Stony Brook.
The Blue
Oyster
Cult went there.
Yeah, Stony Brook is cool. There's a lot of good schools in that system. I mean, it's a really, you know, New York's a big state. And a lot of state universities and colleges, I think.
I lived about a year and a half in a place by Schenectady called Ballston Spa when my pop was getting trained in some nuclear. GE had a nuke plant.
Huh.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't know that. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. He was a machinist mate, and then they were
doing
the nuclear navy, and they had to train a whole bunch of sailors at this stuff. So I have a little bit of that in me. And like when I say the word roof.
Right.
Don't say roof.
yeah.
Rut instead of.
Yeah, you know, route. my father was from New York City, and a lot of people don't. I don't have a real traditional Buffalo accent. I haven't lived there since the 70s, anyways. But my father's from New York City, and so we used to come visit his family in New York. And I remember going to the New York World's Fair in 64, and we used to visit New York. And New York was always, when I was a kid, was always this strange and magical place.
The thruway, right? The New York.
Yeah, I mean, say it again?
The New York thruway. For the longest time.
New York thruway,
It stayed at 55 miles an hour for the longest time.
Yeah, that's a long trip. And we used to drive everywhere. We would drive to New York. We'd drive to Maine, these family trips. And I used to come to New York, and it was always kind of thrilling and kind of a little frightening.
Of course. But
it was fun. You know, I had a lot of relatives
here,
and we used to come visit, so that was cool.
Going back to you being a boy, okay, so your parents, they're listeners. They're collecting records, but were they players? Was there any instruments in the house?
No. You know, neither of my parents had any musical ability. I mean, there's some distant cousin who was like a fairly well-known violinist, classical violinist. But, you know, and the truth of the matter is, you know, I'm one of four kids, and we all took instruments. You know, my one sister took flute, one took violin, my brother played clarinet. I played trumpet, and I was like the worst trumpet player.
Let me ask you about that. So there was music in school.
Yeah, school music programs like there used to be. I'm not sure if they still have them, but everybody, you know, could you know, be in the band or the orchestra. And I was like fourth
chair. So you got put on trumpet?
Chair.
You put on trumpet.
Yeah,
fourth
and I
chair.
Was terrible. Okay. I was terrible.
That's probably your first gig, though, right?
Well, you know, I mean, I played a little piano. I took piano lessons, which I failed at. And I played a little trumpet in my school band.
Whose idea was piano lessons?
So that was terrible.
Whose idea was piano lessons?
Oh, it was probably my parents. It was what people did. You know, we had a little piano. And
no, I've had guests on the show that were traumatized by some piano lessons. They almost left music because of it. Other people, it was the greatest thing in the world. It helped them down the road. So I always ask about that.
Yeah, I wasn't traumatized by it, but I never really took to it. And, you know, part of it is, I think, is I have sort of a deficiency in math. I'm not really good at math, and I'm not good at spatial relations and certain things. And, you know, the whole reading music thing, you know, was always a problem for me.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, when I turned around 12 and a half, I got an electric bass, which was my first instrument. And I actually had my father, you know, go to the music store, and we bought a sort of a Beatle bass copy. It was a Clara, which is, I think, like a Swedish company, maybe German.
Why bass? Whose idea was bass?
That was my idea. And you know what? I just thought bass looked cool, and I used to look at the Beatles records and Paul McCartney.
Oh, the Hofner. Yeah, yeah.
The Hofner. I mean, I just thought bass was really cool.
I'm not sure
if I had anything else, and I liked the sound of it. So, and I taught myself, and I, like most kids in those days, I listened to the radio. I learned the songs. I taught myself. I had like one lesson, and I became obsessed. As a matter of fact, my parents started to wonder because, you know, I didn't play sports, and I didn't, I didn't do a lot of the things the other kids did. I would just be up in my room for hours at a time playing bass, and I think my parents thought, you know, this is going to lead to, you know, some major adult trauma, which I guess it did, you know.
I got a Hofner, but that's okay. I got a Hofner because you make beautiful music, so it's worth it.
Yeah.
I got a Hofner made in China, so it was only $250 to play with Dan Falco a couple of years ago. But, man, are they are individual. There's no bass like them. It weighs like 3 pounds. It's got these little flats. It's a trip. And I did a.
They're really fun. They're really fun.
Here, I want to play. Did I say the name of the first song? After Miles and Train, I played You'll Curse the Day. This one's called I've Got a Secret List.
gonna have a lot of fun. Gonna hit a home run in the littlest league possible. In the littlest league possible. Gonna make a big splash. Don't have to talk trash. In the littlest league possible. In the littlest league possible. The most rudimentary division of competition. Never collide. To be the biggest fish in the smallest pond. On the littlest island where I shall reside. Texas League. And meanwhile, after too much, and also from running too fast, you've run out of gas. But that's not possible. Littlest League is possible.
カッパが僕を無視する。僕もカッパを無視する。なんか変だな。
背中を流してくれないか。
やっと口を開いたカッパが言う。皿はあるけど甲羅はなくて、肌とか普通に肌色で、相撲が強そうな感じも、尻子玉を抜く感じもない。引退したカッパなのかな。なんか変だな。完全に気を抜いたカッパが言う。名前を聞かれたので答えると、カッパを知りそうにという。気がついたらカッパいなくて、一人ぼっちの浴室で湯船に浸かってる。なんか変だな。ただのハゲてデブのおじさんだ。君の30年後の僕なんだ。言えるはずもない。ああ、いい気持ちだな。胸が苦しくこれしか言えない。一応名前を聞いてみる。へえ、そうでも言っておこう。気がついたら僕はいなくて、一人ぼっちの靴で湯船に浸かってる。誰かに言えるはずもない。
Mandy Boone used to listen to Cheech and Chong records, and there's this great bit where they're, hey, man, what kind of movie, what are you doing? I'm watching a movie. What kind of movie? Well, it's kind of boring. It's this Indian movie. Because some test patterns had like an Indian guy, native person. Yeah, with the feathered bonnet and stuff. And yeah, I can remember a lot of those bits still. Okay, we just heard I've Got a Secret List, Robert Posch from the new album, Guided by Voices, from Bob Pollard, The Littlest League Possible, Missing with Hard Hot Water, those are teenagers up in Seattle, Nango from Hokkaido with Kappa. I think Kappa's got the little dish on his head, right? And it's got to have water in it. And use it to teach kids how to be safe around lakes, not drown. Alex Zhang Hungtai with Perot. And finally, Robert Posch with the test pattern setting is what we were talking about right there. So, you're in the school band just for a little bit, fourth chair trumpet. You get a bass. You're doing the Brian Wilson up in my room thing. And what about like after school, in the afternoon, did you do the garage band thing with some buddies?
Oh, yeah. You know, I started in junior high school. I mean, I think I played my first concert in front of people. And by concert, I mean in the junior high school auditorium in like 1970. And I do remember it was a power trio, in a sense. It was bass, guitar, and drums. Uh-huh. And we played some Iron Butterfly covers.
All right.
We played a Steppenwolf cover. We played something from the Super Session record, some Harvey Brooks tune.
Yeah.
And we played a version of If I Were a Carpenter. And we played a couple of what we called originals, which were instrumentals, which are like three and four chord instrumentals. So, yeah, I started.
Was the it funny scary? Thing about How that was that gig, first gig? Was it scary?
It wasn't scary, except that right before we had this play, I broke a string on my bass. And I was playing a Fender Precision by then. I'd switched from I put the clear away, the Faulkner style bass, and I had a nice Fender Precision I got for $125. It was a 66, which I still have.
Smart
move. I broke a string, and I'd never broken a string, and I didn't have any spare strings. And the funny thing is that I had forgotten that I had another bass sitting in my closet. And I panicked, and actually we sent somebody else to try to go to the music store to buy a string, and they didn't have any. Luckily, we were warming up for a really cool Buffalo band called The Die Still Lives. And these were guys from the city, and they all had a full set of custom brand amplifiers. So with those big black,
sparkly,
puffy Noga-eyed ones, and the guy played a Precision. And he was probably around like 19, and here I am like 12 and a half. I've just broken the string, and I actually begged the guy. I said, please, please, can I borrow your bass? And he actually relented. So I played my first gig ever with this borrowed bass. And, that was the most nerve-wracking thing. The funny thing is that
Well, Fender's a Fender, though. That's a good thing. Sometimes I'll go to a town, just make sure there are Fender P's there.
Right, exactly. No, it's a great bass.
And my union card, when I got AFM Local 47, they had me audition,
Right.
Up there at the Union Hall, and then they gave me a card, and it said Fender Bass. Because the real bass is called a stand-up thing, right?
Yeah. No, that I remember. That was the generic term for electric bass for a long time was Fender Bass.
So 1980, you moved to New York City. Was that because of music?
Yeah, what happened is I went away to college, and I had been playing with some guys in Buffalo. We were doing sort of a bluesy rock. It was sort of like rock, but we had a really great harp player. And anyways, I went away to college, and I came back, and we sort of thought, well, let's sort of put this band together again. And first we moved to New Haven because we thought, well, we can't really afford to live in New York. And New Haven was right between Boston and New York, and the bands that we really liked were pretty much either in Boston or New York. So we lived in New Haven for a year, and we played some gigs with like Mission of Burma and bands like that, and we put together...
What was the name of this band, Robert?
I'm sorry, again?
What was the name of this band?
The name of the band was Tot Rocket. TOT Rocket, which was a ridiculous name that I came up with, and I'm not sure why. And we started playing like weird covers, like we played like Graham Parker tunes and stuff like Clash. And then we ended up writing our own songs, and we put out a couple 7-inch records, and we moved to New York as a band after like a year and a half in New Haven, where we were working as janitors. We moved to New York.
You know who's New Haven? Doug Wimbush.
But, say it again?
Doug Wimbush.
Oh, yeah.
Great bassman, right? Yeah. He's New Haven. And Kay, she played Black Flag for a while.
So right,
she was
right,
born
exactly.
in New Haven. I think Doug still
lives
there.
It was a cool place to live. I mean, it was fine, and it was really cheap. I think the three of us were living in a house. We were paying like $297 a month for the whole house.
Jesus.
So, you know, we could do it.
Okay, so you guys moved to, what happens to Top Rocket when they go to the big city?
Well, when we moved to the big city, we sort of, you know, we released a couple more records, and I don't know, we were playing around the circuit like we played Max's Kansas City, and we played CBGB. And we're sort of struggling as sort of a punkish, bluesy, punkish rock band. And we're writing some decent stuff. And then at a certain point, actually, this leads into a very, very funny story, which I'll try to keep very brief for you. But that band sort of morphed into this group called Western Eyes, which was a reworking of Top Rocket with this producer, Nicholas Collins, who was an electronic music guy who had this, he had his own like sort of handmade, homemade system of weird gating channels. So he did all kinds of weird processing. We put out an LP under the Western Eyes name. At that point, I was sort of getting fed up with working with these same fellows and just sort of banging our heads against the wall in the New York music scene because I think maybe we weren't quite hip enough. So I did what people do in the old days when you don't know what to do. I went back to school. Now, the funny thing is I applied for and got into the one school that I applied for, which is the Columbia University Journalism Program, which was actually like a really top school.
Yeah, sure.
So I got my student loans. I told my parents, hey, I'm going back to school. And during the first week of school, my friend from the old band, Andrew, called me and he said, listen, I'm at Top Cat Rehearsal Studios. And Pill, meaning Johnny Lydon, they're looking for a new guitarist. And you're the right guy. Which, in a sense, I was.
Robert, wait a minute here. So you're on guitar by this point. You had quit bass.
I'm playing guitar. Yeah, I switched to guitar, sort of.
Well, tell me about that. How'd that happen?
You know, I was playing bass.
You didn't do bass as a... You did bass all the way through teenager, right?
Yeah, I did. And then I started playing some guitar probably when I was in college or right before college. I just discovered that I could play lead guitar. So I started learning all those solos, like from the Allman Brothers and Eric Clapton.
What was your first guitar?
My first guitar was a really beat up Telecaster. I think I got for $125. Someone had like painted it orange, put a Bigsby on it, put humbucking pickups on it. The neck was terrible.
Oh.
And that was my first real guitar.
What kind of amp?
What's that?
Amp.
I was using like, I think for like, I was borrowing amps from my friends, so they were basically like Fender Pro Reverb or Fender Super Reverb.
Sure, sure.
So I was using that. And then eventually, soon after that, I bought a friend of mine. His brother was in the Army, and he was in Texas, and he found me a National Town and Country, a 1956 National Town and Country for like $150. And he brought that back, and that was my main guitar for a number of years.
Wow.
Which is sort of a strange guitar to play, but I thought it was super cool.
Yeah, they are. Let's go back. Did you try out for Johnny Rotten?
Well, so what happened with Pills? So I go to this audition. They have already auditioned every guitarist in New York. I go there, and I've got my Les Paul Jr. double cutaway, which was my guitar choice. And, you know, I plug into the Marshalls, and this is a big rehearsal studio. I barely knew the material. I knew, like, three songs. I knew three Pills songs from, like, the first record. And so, anyways, I bluffed my way through the audition, and they said, okay, you're it. You're in the band. And I'm like, what? And they said, no, we love you. You're good. And actually, John called me up at night, and he said, well, you know, we want you, Robert. And I was like, okay. And he said, well, listen, we're going to be going to Japan soon, blah, blah, blah. So anyways, this is my first week of graduate school. So I call my parents up, and I say, Mom, Dad, you know, because I was getting student loans, and they were going to help me a little bit. And I said, Mom, Dad, remember journalism school And they go, yeah. And I said, well, remember, have you heard of a guy named Johnny Rotten? And I said, listen, I think I'm going to have to leave school and, like, go on tour with his band. So my mother, I'll never forget it. I mean, this is my mother who's, you know, no longer with us, but she was a lovely woman. And she said, Robert, you know, you can go to school anytime, but, you know, Johnny Rotten only comes around once. Now, they had no idea who he was, right?
Okay, yeah, but still bitching, they supported you.
They supported me. So anyway, so for 2 weeks, and this is ridiculous, and this is all online. If you Google Robert Paws and Public Image Limited, you'll find this whole story in great detail. So I went to one rehearsal, and as it turned out, they really wanted someone to sort of a clone of their previous guitarist.
Oh, Keith Levine.
No, this was after the Levine period. Keith Levine, I could have done fine because I played like him. This was a more of a commercial sounding guy, sort of a little flashier. And so we started rehearsing, and like he said, oh, you know, for this song, you know, it doesn't sound right. Like you don't have a flanger, and you don't have this, you don't have that. And anyway, it became clear after a couple of rehearsals that like they didn't really want to rehearse a new guitarist. It was just, you know, and I was cramming. I was listening to Pill. And the weird thing is I was telling people, you know, I'm in Pill now. And they were like, oh, yeah, right, sure, you're a kid, you know. And I said, no, really, I auditioned and I'm in Pill. And anyhow, this went on for 2 weeks. And then basically it turned out that they rehired their old guitarist.
Oh, I'm so sorry. So
there I am going to graduate school. And, like, my mind is totally blown, you know. Anyways, I finished school and graduated, and that was fine. But it was the weirdest thing because it was like being snatched up into the big time and then being let down.
Yeah, the taunt. Robert, you know? We're at the end of the first hour, August 8th, yeah. 2018, edition of Watt for Pedro Show. Special guest, Robert Paws. Hold tight for hour two. August 8th, 2018. It's the second hour of the Watt for Pedro Show.
above my head. A thought, you might just keep on turning, even as hell was burning down. I wish that I could fuck up the whole world.
Ah!
For Pedro Show, start the second hour with more Frozen Flowers from Robert Plus, brand new album. Then Nels Klein, Scott Amendola's project, Stretched Woven with Dawn Took Its Time. Carla Bozulich, Deeper Than the Well, she's from Pedro. Mold Omen, Baltimore, with the demo of part three of All That Glitters Is Mold. Mert from Hungary with Drain, I guess from the practice pad, and Robert Pause with partial clearing. Yeah, these titles. do the titles come first?
Sometimes they do, but usually I love words. I love playing with words. I like, you know, poetry and rhymes and not rhymes. And I like little catchphrases and sort of like, you know, with the Band of Susan stuff, like, you know, titles are like Hope Against Hope. And, you know, they're basically... you know, phrases or parts of speech that I like. These titles, like Partial Clearing, actually was sort of descriptive of the song, because it starts with this real kind of grainy thing, and then in the middle of the song, there's this sort of pretty kind of arpeggio part, uh-huh. And it goes back to the sort of more distorted stuff. So for me, that one, Partial Clearing, was actually descriptive. Now, generally, my titles are not descriptive of the music. They're just things that occur to me that, you know, maybe something in the music evokes, you know, some kind of phrase, and I'll attach it.
You mentioned Band of Susans. After this pill dilemma, or taunt, and then the graduating school, you don't become a reporter, right?
No, you know, that's the thing, is I went back to my old day job, which was like working at a law firm, like summarizing trial testimony and deposition testimony. You know, the thing about journalism school is I loved the editing and the writing, but I found that I didn't really like a lot of the reporting because I just was not, maybe it was a question of being inhibited or a social issue, but I didn't like pestering people and making them tell me things they didn't want to tell me, which was a lot of what reporting is.
Yeah, of course.
It was a great program, and I learned a lot, and my writing improved. And actually, I have an evaluation from one of my professors who said, you should take that black shoe polish out of your hair and, like, become a writer. Because I was, you know, dyeing my hair with Miss Claire all then, of course. But you know, I didn't. But this led to me just deciding I wanted to start from scratch. I didn't want to have a band. I didn't want to play what other people were playing. I didn't want to do anything except do exactly what I wanted. So I had a couple of digital delays, and, you know, which were pretty new at the time, and some distortion pedals, and I would sit there and I would like start a loop, maybe a drone, and then maybe I would put a riff on top of it, and then I would add a third guitar part, and that was sort of the genesis of Band of Susans. I put out a solo cassette tape called Sometimes, which had some of this material, but what it was is I became inspired. I became inspired by, you know, putting a tube screamer in front of a rat and hearing how beautiful that sounded. And I was really interested in, like, guitar feedback and guitar drones. And I sort of started writing. At the same time, I was also playing with Reese Chatham, who's a great guitar composer.
I wanted to ask you about him. First, I want to play this, though, Farther South from Tel Aviv.
Bereshit bara milchama. Ve'acharit milchama. Uvenzo, mavet. Ve'od mavet. ועוד מוות, ועוד הרבה מוות, רק מוות, מטופש, מפגר, ללא מילים, מוות, עוד ועוד מוות. אני יודע שאני חוזר על עצמי, אבל אין לי דרך אחרת להעביר את זה. מוות, 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 מוות. החיים.
I like when you're drunk that you give me a hug. But I know you'll leave when the universe
Watch for People
Show.
Yeah,
I don't know when we're on the air and when we're not, and I'm sorry if I'm stepping on you.
No, you ain't. You ain't. It's righteous. You know.
Okay.
We should have you on for like round two. In the
right.
beginning, he created War from Farther South, Lucy Leave, Long Sequence, Instituto No, The Mass, Patrick Grant with Circulation in G, maybe. That's a kind of guitar trippy thing. And then Robert Posse with Ribbon Candy Colors. Yeah, Reese Chatham, people. I know about him because of Thirst. And I know there's a weird kind of parallel universe with Glenn Branca, right?
Right, exactly, yeah.
So tell the listeners about Reese Chatham and you.
Well, Reese Chatham, you know, was really known in the 80s for... he was a pretty serious music composer with this pretty serious music background, but he sort of, I think he went and saw the Ramones at CBGB, and he sort of discovered the electric guitar, and he put it to a different uses than what rock bands were doing. He was sort of more, he made a more orchestral use of the guitar, and he's most famous for a song called Guitar Trio, which if you haven't heard, you should really check out, which is just about the overtones of mass guitars, one string, then two strings, and five strings. I started playing with him in his band in like around 84, and he was very inspirational to me because he was making music out of just certain elements of the guitar. Like he loved super clean guitars and these sort of the different overtones on the string. I, in turn, was, you know, interested in super distorted guitars and those overtones and feedback and stuff. So I have to say Reese was a great inspiration. And also my partner in the band, Susan Stenger, she was before the band even started, she was, you know, one of my best friends, or she was my best friend, and she had studied flute in Prague. She introduced me, and also this guy, Nicholas Collins, who I met in college. They both introduced me to these so-called serious music composers, people like Phil Niblock and John Cage and Lamont Young and Alvin Lucier and Christian Wolff. So in a sense, in terms of my musical education, also Julius Eastman, in my musical education growing up, even though I was obsessed with rock, I also had one ear tuned to the sort of the more serious, almost academic, or what they used to call new music by these, you know, legitimate composers. Anyhow, Band of Susans was an attempt to sort of bridge the gap between my more sort of interest in so-called serious and experimental music and what I loved about rock. And, so, you know, our first song was really Hope Against Hope, which is basically a one-chord song. I mean, it's, in a sense, it's kind of like a Bo Diddley thing, you know, which just goes on and on, one song, one chord, maybe a couple changes in there. Anyhow, the concept of Band of Susans was layered electric guitars, three guitars, very simple parts, but combined into something that sounded really different. And so it was minimalist in its own way. I just got a bunch of my friends together. Three of them were named Susan. They had never really played guitar before. I sort of taught them. I wanted to start from scratch, and I did. So I just decided I'm going to make music just from the elements of music that I like. Very simple, very stripped down, and not necessarily focused so much on melody, and not so much focused on chord changes, more about like layers and textures and sonic architecture. So that was what that was about, and that became, you know, that became a thing.
What was the first gig like?
Band of Susans, the first gig we played at a place called the Love Club, which was in the basement of the Lismar Lounge on First Avenue, little bar. Never played before. We had like tiny little amps, but it was our record release party. We had recorded an EP, and so we invited everyone we knew, and the place was packed, and we kind of got through it, and it was really, really fun, and I think it was, you know, no one had heard anything quite like this.
Oh, great. How long did that band last?
Band of Susans existed from 86 to 95.
Nine years.
A sort of a shifting cast of characters with a certain core,
okay.
Because as we started touring more, certain people couldn't tour, or certain people changed careers or moved or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we put out, I guess, about five CDs and some EPs, and we toured all over the U.S. and also about 12 foreign countries. And
Blast
we
First,
were on
Paul
the UK
Smith,
record
right?
label.
Paul Smith, Blast First.
Paul Smith, Blast First. Yeah, he signed us. He put out our first record. And he, and actually, even before he put us out, John Peel had already been playing us on, you know, on the BBC. So, and, you know, we got some nice write-ups in the New York Times and stuff. And I have a one thing that happened to me is that the day we got a nice review by Robert Palmer in the New York Times, I got these calls from these record companies. And they said, so, like, how did you get your, how did you get that record placed in the New York Times? And I said, well, I put the record in a box, and I went to the post office, and I mailed it. I mean,
great,
I had
great
no
reply.
Connections. You know what I mean? I just sent this stuff out. Same thing with John Peel. I sent the stuff out, and people listened to it.
And they made their own decision.
Exactly.
That's righteous. Look, we're at the end of the second hour, August 8th, 2018 edition of Watt Peter's Show. Special guest, Robert Poss. Hold tight for hour three. August 8th, 2018. It's the third hour. Watt for Pedro Show.
And a sliced piece still relief on 1 second or less, only a snapshot, but don't miss out on all the gory little details, how you saved life over death slowly from one slice day after day another till you have miraculously conquered the odds and emerged a better man, vivid in that one snapshot now, my good friend, passing in that still life beyond the necessary frames, and now a good picture of life. May you have a Rolodex of memories. It's only up from here. Here's looking up your slice, my friend. Glad you could make it. Life is more than a still life, so get out and make it, man.
Watt for Pedro show started off the third hour with Robert Posse doing Bitter Strings. The Healers with Circumstance, Joe Brewer, Still Life, LHS, Brave New World, and Robert Posse with Sketch 72. Was there 71 sketches before this one?
Well, the thing about Sketch 72 is it's a sort of a tongue-in-cheek title because, you know, that was the last thing I recorded for the record, and I wanted to do something that I had done when I was much younger, which was a song in the Keith Richard tuning, that sort of five-string Richard thing.
Yep.
So I did, and also I wanted to play slide guitar, which I never play anymore. And so I put together something really quick, and one of the strange sort of idiosyncratic things about that track is that I took the drum tracks from a Band of Susan song, from like this instrumental tag of the Band of Susan song, and I have the multi-tracks, you know, on digital. I spun off the drums, Ron Spitzer's great drums, and I thought, why don't I use these drum tracks and like write a completely new song? It's nothing to do with the old song. So I put on the drums, and then I put on my five-string Keith Richards style guitar, and which I've always played. I started playing that five-string thing in the 70s, actually, every once in a while. And I just made this song. It's sort of in the spirit of the Exile and Main Street Stones era, which I'm very fond of. And, you know,
You know the story behind that record, Ry Cooder.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right, he shows up to jam with them, and Keith never shows up, but Keith showed up. He was behind the glass or something, recording the whole track he was doing.
Yep.
So you said this song is kind of different than the other song. Let's talk about the whole record.
Sure.
What was the impetus?
Well, you know, the record's a bit of a collection. I mean, I originally was going to make this sort of Band of Susans-esque rock record, but I had I've been working with dance companies. There are these three dance companies I worked with over the years, primarily in the last 10 years with two dance companies, one Alexandra Beller and also a guy named Gerald Cassell. And, you know, with the dance companies, I'd write music this is modern dance. I'd write music for them.
Jerry Cassell.
And I would perform live.
Devo guy?
No. It sounds like the guy from Devo, right? No, this is Gerald Cassell.
Okay.
But that's good. That's a good reference.
So, really interesting, right, music to dancing because great inspiration because it's about rhythm.
It's about rhythm, and it was really fun because I would go to the rehearsals and I would, like, bring a bass or I would bring a guitar, and I would just listen, and I would talk to the choreographers, and I'd get a sense about what is this dance about? You know, is there some sort of emotion you're trying to evoke? Anyhow, I had this material that I performed and written for these dance companies, and I thought, you know, I really want to put this stuff out. And then I had some other more ambient experimental stuff I had lying around, and I just thought, you know, before I move on to my next thing, I want to put out this record. So it's a collection of material from a few years. And it is, I would say it's fairly diverse. I mean, there's some stuff there that uses sort of strings. There's some stuff that's more percussive. There's some stuff that's more straight ahead rock. There's some stuff that uses drum machine. There's some stuff that is no drums. It's an eclectic record in a sense, but it's all me. I don't think anyone else could have sort of put something together quite like this.
No, definitely. It's not like a genre thing. To me, it sounds like Robert Boss. It's really good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you did a really good job. I want to play The Sixth Sense, Betrayed.
Thank you. September 7th, folks. That means it's National Salami Appreciation Day. Hope you've got big plans for an evening out on the town, eating some delicious salami. If you prefer a relaxing meal at home, your local grocer should have a variety of delightful salamis to choose from. Or, if you're super lazy, order that pizza with pepperoni, one of the more popular types of salami. Here are some ways to celebrate National Salami Appreciation Day. Pick up a pound or two at the deli and pique the interest of your co-workers with some fun salami facts. I bet you didn't know that salami can be stored at room temperature for up to 10 years. That most cultures have some sort of cured, fermented, air-dried meat. Here are some: Italy, France, Serbia, Slovenia, Croatia, the Czech Republic, Netherlands, Belgium, Luxembourg, Greece, Romania, Macedonia, Bulgaria, Poland, and Turkey. The salami can be bacteria cured or salt cured. That the tangy flavor of salami comes from acid, a lowered pH. This stops the growth of harmful bacteria. Try these fun ways to celebrate National Salami Appreciation Day. Play a game of pin the tail on the salami. Play a game of bobbing for salami. Even more delightful than floating in a tub of hot butter. Watch out for your arteries, though. Have a Salami Day food contest. Don't forget salami party hats. Invite every guest to bring a dachshund wiener dog. Play a good game of sausage ball. Throw a knitting or crocheting party to make doilies and coverlets for your salami. How about a salami sculpture contest? Play Name That Salami by having a blindfolded taste test. And last but not least, make your home salami friendly by buying National Salami Appreciation Day t-shirts for everyone in your family. But no matter what, have a great Salami Day. And wish all your friends a happy Salami Day too, since one good sausage party deserves another.
Lotus blooms.
water.
On a very sweet spring day. What is it, what is it, what is happening? I'm trying hard to get surrounded by surprise. Hypochondriac in good health, seek opportunities. I was fond of the deserter, I know. There's no need to show you. It was getting hard to find the motive for this line of action, so the problem has not been sorted out yet. Yeah, we have been doing things this way ever since you have left us, but I can't say, can't recall the reason why. And if you had to stop my digs from high down,
oh, would you have to remind me why? honey, if you had to stop my ticks from hiding, do you think that they just were? Oh, would you have to remind me once about it and say that you just were? And if you have to stop my tics from hiding, do you think that they just were?
Watch for Pedro show the last music for this edition. It's The Sixth Sense Betrayed. Listen carefully at snare drum, and you'll have a hint about the title there, people. Ralph Carney and Chris Butler, had Chris Butler on the show last week with Salami Appreciation Day. Yeah, they made an album of all kind of trippy holidays. They're usually generated by industry kind of brands. And yeah, Salami Day. Salami Appreciation Day. Very sad about Ralph Carney. Great horn man. And but Chris is still plowing. Great cat. Then we had SS Space Systems from upstate New York doing Tsui Unke. Oswaldovi and Andrea Rotin with Ticks Are Hiding. Midwestern Medicine, something live called Puppy Dreams. And then finally, the longest tune from the new album you got there, Robert. Time Frames Marking Time. Which, really, what's behind that tune?
That was a live performance. It's actually an excerpt of about a 20-minute live performance I did with this for the choreographer Sally Gross and her dance company. And that she died a couple of years ago. This was maybe the last performance I did with her. And she was a very interesting woman who had grown up sort of, I think, speaking Yiddish, and then she got involved in the Judson School of Modern Dance. And she was around 80-something when she died. Wow. I loved working with her. She was very sort of an austere minimalist, but very emotional and very interested in pure dance. And it was a real privilege to work with her. So that track is, again, as I said, is an excerpt of a live performance. So it's just guitar and, you know, some pedals. And I'm, you know, if you listen carefully, you'll hear some dancers shuffling around in the background. And that was great. That was done at a place called West Beth, which is an old, just sort of an apartment complex set up for artists of various types. One of the few places in New York where artists were sort of or could live very inexpensively, choreographers and painters and musicians, way on the west side of New York.
What area?
That's way in the west side, sort of in the West Village. Near a place called Bethune Street, fairly obscure street, okay. almost on the water, way on the west side.
Like Water Street, wetlands. It used to be. Yeah,
right.
That's interesting. They actually set stuff for artists. You know.
It was great.
And this lady, this is great. Working with older people is really interesting.
Yeah, she was fascinating, and I was recommended to her by this composer Phil Niblock, and she just called me up out of the blue and said, "Phil says you might be interested in working with me." And I was like, I had never worked with a dance company before, and I met her, and it was great. And I would do things like I had electric bass, I would bow to create long tones, and I had these Tibetan these singing bowls I would use, and I would do some percussion stuff with wood blocks. I mean, it sort of was a varied, it wasn't just guitar. And I performed with her, you know, fairly for around 8 years on and off. And it was really great. Really great.
You know, what about you meet younger musicians? Did they ever ask you for advice? What would you tell them about this racket?
Well, you know, It's probably really shop-worn advice, but just don't listen to too many people in terms of the limitations they might want to put on you. In other words, do really what you want to do, because if you do what you want to do and you're not successful, at least you have the art, you have the music, and you can be proud of it. If you try to second-guess the marketplace and try to sort of figure out what is, you know, what would really be a hit now, what would really be cool. Yeah, if you're successful, fine. But if you're not, you're sort of left with nothing because you feel like, well, I kind of sold out or I kind of tried to second guess the popular culture marketplace. So, you know, it, to me, it's like I talk about it this way. You know, I've had day jobs my whole life, and I'm still working a day job. I do location sound for television, which I enjoy. But, you know, I never really wanted to have a day job necessarily in music. I feel like, well, I look at it this way. how many poets in America make a living? There's about five poets probably in America that make a living. And I've always thought, like, think like a poet. Poets do stuff because they want to be poets.
Yeah.
They like poetry. They love language.
Yeah.
They don't do it because, like, I'm going to be a poet and I'm going to, like, make a fortune and I'm going to sell a screenplay and I'm going to, you know, sell the rights to my poetry. No, they do it because they're driven to be poets. And it may sound like a bit like I'm an artiste or something, but I sort of thought, think like a poet. Think like a poet.
Sure.
Do your poetry.
That's great advice. And what's next for you?
Next, you know, I've been playing around town with this art rock band called Heroes of Tulik, which is a fun band, playing their material. I have a bunch of solo shows coming up. I'm trying to do some, you know, I've been doing some solo guitar and electronic things. I want to do some more duos and trios. I want to get more involved in doing sort of more improvised stuff, you know, with some of the people here in New York. And then I want to make another record. Maybe I'll make that rock record that I didn't make before, or maybe I won't. But, you know, I just keep doing what I do, and I'm really happy when there's an audience for it. And it's really fun to meet some younger musicians. I was playing with this drummer, Dom Sapolo, who's really cool. He just joined this Japanese band, Mono, which are really great.
Oh, I know about them.
And, you know, I like meeting new musicians, and I like sort of doing short-term collaborations. I miss having a band, but I don't miss having a band. I don't miss being on the phone all day trying to arrange for one rehearsal. I like these short-term collaborations, and I do some stuff with Susan Stenger still. Like, we did something
in Paris. Don't you like trade files with people?
Say it again?
Trade files with people.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's one of the good things about the Internet. I've been on whole albums with people I've never even met.
I've done some of that, and that's great.
Totally the bad new days. There's some good things.
No, it's great, and especially internationally. I mean, I have the people from other countries. You know, people write to me
like
from Malaysia and Singapore.
The environment you grew up with that hosting thing with your parents.
Say that one more time.
The environment you grew up with your parents, the hosting.
Yeah,
that ethic is still alive.
International.
Yeah, international.
Absolutely.
Robert, it's been a big honor to have you on my show. Thank you so much. I really, really appreciate it. It's been beautiful. And keep on keeping on.
And, I will.
Something new, please send my way so I can play it.
Absolutely.
Okay. It's been the August 8th, 2018 edition of Watch for Pedro show. Keep your powder dry.